and welcome to Binge or Cringe. My name is Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
Adam, I've been watching a lot of TV, all for you, all so I can share it with you.
Seems like an odd way to dedicate your life, but...
it's one of those things.
Thanks for taking the bullet there, Batman. You're going to dedicate your life to an ideal. I mean, that's, as good as, you know, justice.
Watching TV for you. Okay, I'm going to start off Binge or Cringe with some definite binge here. And that would be, well, why go into it and be directly? You know, it used to be you had to be on Carson to be a success as a stand-up. Then you had to have an HBO special. Now...
Well, that still doesn't hurt.
No, it doesn't hurt. Now, you have to have a Netflix special.
I would agree with that, yes.
Yes.
There is just a proliferation of...
Ooh, nice one.
Of stand-up... Like, I forgot what... We had just watched one of them, and I was like, I wonder what else they have on here. And in my head, like, there's only, you know... six stand-up specials.
Oh,
like
no.
Two of them are Eddie Murphy's, and then, like, I hit it, and I'm just like, ugh.
So let's talk, first of all, about one that is well worth your time, John Mulroney. Kid Gorgeous.
I would agree. Like, I've not seen his stand-up, but I have seen him in other media.
He is spectacular. He reminds me of... Well, I want to say the comedians of yore. He's got the everyday thing happening like Seinfeld, and I will reference Cosby because early Cosby is brilliant comedy.
I will grant that his earlier career, especially, like, I don't want to get into everything else, but, like,
right.
The Cosby Show is still a good show.
Yes,
his stand-up specials are still exceptional. I've seen the guy live. Like before, and he's just as funny.
When it comes to telling a well-crafted joke, he can do it. And there are others. And what I noticed with Kid Gorgeous, he's doing the same thing. And he's doing it perfectly. He's using funny words like hinky and haberdashery. And what he's saying is built upon his life. To some extent, I mean, obviously you don't know how much, but it's, you know, you start with a little grain of something and then you add to it.
I mean, I'd argue that the best stand-up comedians, like, you've got the ones that'll just pop off the one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, honestly, like, I can...
Like Stephen Wright.
Right. Well, I mean, I didn't mean to use that. Yes, right.
But Stephen Wright's funny, but I can't tell you really anything about Stephen Wright, except that I find him amusing.
Well, I mean, do you want to listen to a 45-minute... stand-up special.
No, 10. I'm maxed.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're in a club or if you're doing a set, like, where you've got just a kind of a cavalcade, like, going there, those are fine. But if you will name off your favorite stand-up comedians or even your best, like, I'm willing to bet that it's the storytellers, the ones that can sit there and tell you a 22-minute story.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even realize you've been sitting there the length of a sitcom. And you're like, wait, they're only on story one. Like, it's an engaging, like, yarn in as much as a television show, a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Except the great thing, and I'm sure that the people that book them enjoy this, like, you don't have to go, like, live on location. You don't have to hire other actors. You don't have to hire I guess you have one writer at least, maybe a couple for
mm-hmm.
the. But, I mean, like.
It's real inexpensive.
This individual, it's just them. It's just them engaging the audience. And like I said, like, I'm not telling you that, you know, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, you know, Robert, I'm not telling you those guys don't engage the audience, but they've got to have, you know, 20, 40, 150, like, million dollars whenever they start telling stories. The,
mm-hmm.
the thing about, like, Murphy in the late 80s or maybe even the early 90s, Dennis Leary, Robin Williams, Billy Crystal, these guys, they are their own special effect. Like, they're
mm-hmm.
all the talent that they need in those particular
Ellen
instances.
DeGeneres.
Right.
Phone Call to God. Still funny.
I mean, there's a good reason the woman has had a show for how long?
Yeah. Still funny.
Yeah.
So, I've watched a few of these, and I just wanted to pass this on. Dave Chappelle, you need to watch it.
Have you seen Chappelle lately?
Yeah.
Like, he's not the skinny little kid. Like,
no, he's like a grown-up that man person.
You're taking the lunch money from. Like, I somebody was doing a side-by-side comparison I happened to catch on, like, YouTube. And, like, basically, that was the title of it. What happened to, like, Chappelle could be, like, an alternate and lethal weapon now. Like, mm-hmm. he could be too old for this stuff. Like, I was just going, holy, what, how did I miss that? Like, was I asleep? Did I rip Van Winkle? Like, what, why does Dave Chappelle look like he's... He could break me in half now.
Now, what I've heard other comedians say about his shows, I wish I could remember what comedians said that, but they were people I found very funny, and therefore I respected what they had to say. They said that with him, it seems so effortless that it really seems like he's making it all up.
He just got up there, and he's...
But then he'll tie it together.
He's riffing it off the top of his head.
Mm-hmm.
He does this brilliant bit about... Key and Peele.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you have not watched either of their shows that are on Comedy Central, both of them feature sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
They feature introductions from the host, or in the Key and Peele's case, the hosts. It's about 22 minutes after commercials, and I'm almost certain that they're using the set that Chappelle had when the Chappelle Show was on Comedy Central.
Oh, probably.
Listening to him kind of, and I don't know if it's in a hateful way or if it's just kind of, if it's just material. Like, because I'm not friends with him, so I don't know how he actually feels on it. But he's just going on and on. He's like, yeah, where did they ever think to do that? I can't imagine that, having an African-American man come out, introduce, like, some potentially racially charged, like, sketches, do it in about 22 minutes, maybe have it air before the Daily Show. Wherever did those geniuses get that idea? And to do it on Comedy Central, of all places. Guys, wow. I applaud. And I'm just going, I don't, is he mad? Is it? I mean, it's a valid point. I'm going to give him that. But, like, it's just, it really does. Like, it's like listening to Jeff Goldblum, like, read from a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Spielberg even said, he goes, the great thing about Jeff Goldblum, no matter how many lines of dialogue, no matter what script you give him, Jeff Goldblum sounds like he's making it up right there. And he's like, I've written some of it, and I've listened to him say it, and I'm like, wow, is he? Oh, wait, no, I wrote that. I wrote that.
So, we can certainly say Dave Chappelle is worth your time. So is the lovely John Mulroney. Now, I've watched some, which I'll bet you have not. Dimitri Martin. He is clever.
I saw his stuff. He was on The Daily Show for a couple years, wasn't
okay.
he?
Okay, I don't know.
If I'm remembering correctly, I think he was.
Now, by the way, in our opinion, to be a good stand-up, you have to be smart. You have to be.
Well, I mean,
to an extent.
You can do some stupid humor, like you can do like a couple of pratfalls, but again, like you can't have a 45-minute mm-hmm. special or a television show or whatever. Most people don't just want to be stand-up comedians. They want to parlay that into, like I said, like sitcom, movie,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And if that's the only thing you've got in your bag of tricks, like you're going to be stuck doing, you know, 10 minutes here, 5 minutes there, which,
right.
I mean, whatever. Like, I'm not disrespecting, like, that talent. But if you're wanting to broaden your horizon, you can't just be that one-trick pony.
Mm-hmm. So what you have here is Dimitri's special is a little different in that you have, you know, the special in front of the audience and everything. But then you'll have him doing a voiceover and putting up a cartoon photo as well. And he's got some stuff with pictures where, for instance, Christmas cookies, how he loves them so much, and he wants to be able to offer them throughout the year. So instead of, you know, a Christmas tree, it's like, how about this forest-themed cookie? And things even funnier than that. But he's just, he's got a different approach to
yeah.
things and a different sense of timing, but I liked him. Now, there are two females who I have recently watched. One is Hannah Godsby, and the other is Eliza, elder millennial. Of the two, Eliza is much more laugh-out-loud funny. What I noticed, however, with both of them, and I have pondered this thought, Eliza is going to be just like your standard stand-up comic, as we have just discussed. She's got all this going on. She's delivering the jokes. She's got great presence. And, this is unusual, she is extremely attractive. I'm not saying stand-up comics are homely, but
well, I mean,
to be like in, Barbie pretty.
In the entertainment industry, traditionally,
mm-hmm.
and I, I'm not saying this is the only way that it works. If you will name off the people that they want to push to the forefront of, say, like a blockbuster, like, okay, Chris Pratt, he's not a bad-looking gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the dinosaurs, very much like the stars of Jurassic World.
But
I'm
he
certain...
He had to buff out.
Right. Right, I'm saying, and like, when did he become popular? When it was, when he was just Chris Pratt on Parks and Rec? Or did he really
mm-hmm.
seem to strike when, let's say, the abs of steel?
Yes.
Like, so, Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah.
Eliza has the abs of steel, but... she does a great bit about how women are slobs and they all have, you know, like the goblin inside of them. Like when they want a guy to leave their place because the goblin wants to come out and just eat a bag of Oreos, things like that. And she has a lot of physical humor going on. And I'm going to tie these two together, just like Dave Chappelle. Now, Hannah Godsby.
She's making a gesture
I
right
am.
Now, which is the problem with
I know.
Only being able to see this in the,
it's a really
the
important
auditory
gesture.
Media. We actually do a lot of things with our hands. Sometimes we're performing things that
in
after
mime.
I do it, I really think about it, and I'm like, this is actually just for a
for
audience
us.
Of one. Jane is the only one that can see me.
But I appreciate it for the world.
Or again, in your case, I'm just sitting there going, I'm the only one that can see this. There's
I have
that
to
gesture.
Use my hands.
That gesture is meaningless on a podcast.
When she does the goblin. Go home! It's nice. Anyway, so Hannah Godsby is Australian. Throughout the whole show, throughout the latter half of the show, she said she was going to quit comedy. By the end of the show, I think I believed her. Hannah Godsby did a great thing. She is out, and she is from Tasmania, where apparently till, I want to say, 96, 97, it was against the law to be gay. So she said Tasmania is very small, and she left. And she said when she was a teenager, the first time she saw any other people who were gay was at a huge Mardi Gras thing. And her response is, well, where are the quiet ones that just want to sit at home and have some tea? Because that's not really me. And
she travels the sea.
Yes.
She's like, oh, wow. Guys, let's chill.
She's like,
let us definitely chill.
I don't really shine in a glittery party atmosphere. And she looks like, she reminded me of someone who would be the neighbor in an Agatha Christie story. You're just a lovely neighbor. She has some tea. She's knitting. And she's got a very interesting sense of timing. But what is similar between Hannah and Eliza is they both use their stand-up as platforms for change. Now, Hannah's was far more serious because as she got toward the end, she was talking about how she was beaten up for who she was and just a lot. And it was very well presented, obviously, and a heartbreaking story. But she said she was not going to continue in comedy because she felt she was being degrading to herself. And that was how she thought. So I'm guessing that was her last special. But the point is, she wasn't there to just tell jokes. She had something important she wanted to say. Eliza fitted in much more briefly in that she'd tell a joke about dating and this and that and breaking up with whoever. And then she would say, girls, no one is allowed to hit you ever, ever, ever. It's not funny and it's not right. And so she would bring up a totally valid point, which I found I agreed with 100%. However, I'd never seen it before in a stand-up comedy act where someone stopped the jokes for a perfectly valid platform. And I had not seen it. Well, I've only seen it in these two female comics. I don't know if male comics are doing it. Maybe I just didn't pick up on it as much with African-American comics who will do, you know, the black and white stuff like Chris Rock does. Maybe But he didn't really seem to stop down when he tells his jokes, so I am kind of figuring this out as I go along. It could be a trend that more comics are going to use their stand-up for what's important to them. So, there we have it.
I think it's almost like, it's like when you tell the kids they can have ice cream mm-hmm. at the end of the meal if they'll get through the broccoli. Like, I don't think stand-up comedy is not necessarily like the ideal platform for that. But if you can point it out to people in a popular medium that they're almost definitely going to be listening to, if you can educate somebody a little mm-hmm. bit there, like if you can do a summer blockbuster and you can maybe like bring light to like this or this or this, I'm not saying make your entire movie about mm-hmm. it, don't make the stand like that almost like it changes it from the thing that it was,
right?
But if you can use these platforms to educate some people, like don't preach down to them, but maybe just educate them.
Well, that's what Hannah Godsby
that's what
was
I'm
doing.
Saying. I think that is a positive thing. Like, okay, Bill Burr, like hysterical comedian, been on Jimmy Fallon. He's been on Jimmy Kimmel. I think he's been pretty much. He's been on several of the Comedy Central roasts. Like, he doesn't educate you. Really, he takes something and then he tears it apart. Mm-hmm. Like, he has a famous bit where he just, how much he hates Christmas. Then he's got another one about, like, how he thinks that, his name has left me right, founder of Apple.
Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs. Oh, how much he
or
hates
Ashton
him.
Ashton Kutcher.
No, Ashton Kutcher did not.
Okay, whatever.
And, he goes through it, and he's just like, Steve Jobs didn't do anything. He just thought something up in his car one day, like, comes into his army of nerds, and he's like, I want all that music here. Make it happen, nerds. 8 months. And he walks out, like, just saying, basically, Jobs was not the one building any of that. Mm-hmm. When you've got, like, people like Tesla, or you have these other people that are actually the ones that are physically, like, creating it or figuring out, like, the mathematical equation you need to create this, and they're like, what did Jobs do? What did he do? Like,
He helped the sale of turtlenecks.
Bill Burr basically just takes everything that you love, and he shreds it. Like,
nice.
he'll take on different kinds of things, like things that really are not okay to say in polite society.
Mm-hmm.
Polite society. Like, he's got one where his former girlfriend, and you might see why after you hear that, that she's complaining that men make more than women do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she wanted him to say something along the lines of, oh, no, baby, you're absolutely right. You should make as much as me. And he goes, no. He goes, you know why? He goes, all right, we're all on the Titanic and everything. He goes, who leaves first? Is it the women and children? He goes, so I have to stay there and die. That's the point you're making. I get to stay there and die. You know what? That's the dollar surcharge an hour. That's what you get right there. Like, and he goes through all this stuff about, and he's like, all right, we hear a noise. Like a glass breaks. Who's getting up?
That would be me.
Who's getting up to check what that was with the bat? Is it me? are you guys getting out of the house through the back door while I take? Maybe he's 8 foot tall. I'm not the Karate Kid. I don't know how to fight this guy. Like, he's probably gonna kill me. And you're telling me all of this extra stuff. And he goes, but you want that extra dollar an hour? If you're making 14 and I'm making 15, you're all like, ooh, I want that. And he's like, it's not a buffet. You can't cherry, like, just, that's all his comedy, and it's just, sometimes I feel bad for laughing at the things that mm-hmm. he says, like, because, like, I mean, I've had an iPod, and, like, and he's just sitting there chastised, and he's like, you bought into it, didn't you? You had an iPod, you got an iPhone right now, don't you? Don't laugh at that joke, you're part of the problem, like, just.
But is he on Netflix?
I don't know if he's. I've seen a ton of his stand-up. Mm. I don't know. He does need one. But
he
I'm just,
clearly does.
He is not one of those that is using it as a platform. He just likes to point out stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then he's just angry. Maybe it's his catharsis. It's not so much to educate
sure.
you. Like, maybe it's just so he can get this all off his chest, so, like, he doesn't have, like, a coronary or, like, some kind of aneurysm in his brain or something like that.
I believe that stand-up comics do not need to see psychiatrists because they get it all out there on stage.
I mean, and they really...
Truly.
I mean, I don't know that all of those stories are 100% true. And they're just like, so I'm at the market the other day. Like,
right.
Some of that is probably going to be kind of like a bit of staged theatricality.
Yes.
Like, maybe they need this person to be at that place. They're not writing biographies. It's kind of like when people complain about like canon in shows or something, just going, well, this happened in episode 3. Like, I don't care. Like, as long as you're not changing the fabric of it and you're entertaining me, like, do it. I don't care if he's ever been to the market he's telling me about. As long as when we get to the end of that joke, it's funny and I laughed, that's really all I care
Jim
about.
Jim Gaffigan, Hot Pockets. I mean, just Jim Gaffigan is incredibly funny. Watch every single one of his specials. Your kids can watch every single one of his specials, and they're hilarious. I cannot imagine him using it as a platform for, you know, anything except his love of food, which I really love about
maybe
him.
Maybe that's his platform.
Maybe that
Jane.
Is his platform.
Like, don't turn your nose up at that. Like, what, the man loves food.
But anyway, there are many, many, many stand-up comedy shows on Netflix and other places, but
and I mean,
I hadn't heard of some of these people. Just watch them. Give them 10 minutes.
It's like going through like the grocery aisle and finding like the food or the particular blend or the product that there are so many stand-up comedians, and it's not all just one way. Like there is a comedian out there that speaks to you.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, like when I was in like high school, college, like.
I love high school college.
Slash, it's a collection of years. I was going to use it as a shortened way.
High school college.
Now it's 6 minutes long. Dennis Leary, like that is a comedian who spoke to me, who sadly has not done a special since, I don't know, 1998.
But what a great song that I sing in my head.
I'm just like that. Every day. That guy was talking directly to Patton Oswalt. I'm pretty sure is listening in on my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Things that he has said, I'm just like, I've thought that exact collection of words. Like, what are you doing? Are you coming in while I'm sleeping? Can you read minds?
Mm.
But there is one out there. Like, it's like Burger King. They're going to make it your way. Like, maybe not all of them. Like, every popular stand-up comedian you are not going to necessarily enjoy. Find the one that, like, just hits that spot, like, in your brain, your heart, or, like, maybe they channel the anger that, like, you're not allowed to unleash for whatever reason. Find them out there, and it will hit you in such a way that, like, it's almost therapeutic or medicinal.
Yes, yes. And it feels really good. Really good. So watch these folks, and you know, you may find that they're fantastic. So one other thing I'd like to touch on Netflix, I don't just watch the Netflix, but
they have put a lot of money into that. Like, they're having their own content, like, and it shows. Like, I guarantee you they have cut some pretty fat checks about that.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Netflix is almost like the way
it's like the NBC
Kleenex.
I'm
just like, it really, they have put so much into that, and it's the content they get from other people, the content that they build themselves. Like, the reason why people are so quick to say Netflix on it is because, like, at least right now, like, that's where you've got that content, and it's probably got something for everyone, and it has it in volumes.
Yes. And it's not always easy to find. Because you have to intentionally search for it or just have it pop up us to go, oh, I might actually like that.
Which is, by the way, a stupid first world problem.
Yeah, very much
well,
so.
Well, there's so much content. I have to just I have to dig through. You mean you physically dig through? No. I mean, I keep pushing, like, my thumb.
And I can't talk to the remote.
Yeah, so, and I want to, and I have to type it sometimes if I want, like, if I type in funny, you know.
I can't put in my reviews anymore.
I'm so tired. It's exhausting. You mean like working in a coal mine?
No.
I mean, not even really.
I
mentally,
don't even get black
mentally
lung
exhausting,
from
but I wanted to watch the Orange Is the New Black, and the new season wasn't there yet.
I guess they're still in prison. I don't know.
I'm gonna have to watch the old ones again or find a different show. I mean, Netflix definitely has one because there's friggin' thousands and thousands.
Yes,
of them.
I'm surprised we don't have one. Well, because of the headlines, I had to watch Insatiable. And because my 11-year-old said, oh, I started watching Insatiable. And it's like, what? What? What are you watching?
I should probably check this
out. Yes, exactly.
I am a parent.
And it does say Ma next to it, directed to the mothers. Or maybe it means mature content. I'm not quite sure.
I'm sure. It was talking to my Ma.
Yeah, Ma. Anyway, so Insatiable, I'm guessing, showed up as a suggestion for my child because it stars Debbie Ryan, who starred in Jesse. Jesse from the Disney Channel.
Oh, okay.
Jesse.
Oh, that,
yeah.
I'm going to throw up.
Okay. So here's, and all the headlines are about how the show is fat shaming.
That stupid song won't stop playing in my head.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry about that. Jesse. Okay. So here's the story. And if only Jenna were here to tell it to you now. It has also been called the worst thing Netflix ever produced. Close.
I find that hyperbole is a lot of fun when you're making headlines.
Yes.
The worst ever. Like, the best ever. There has been no tragedy greater than this.
I'm going to say Insatiable reminds me of a less funny, not as well-written version of Desperate Housewives.
See, that's a headline right there that I'd check out.
And Alyssa Milano has turned in to a Stepford wife for this and does it very well. Look that one up.
I like that connection there. obviously, the Frank Oz remake, not the original.
So you've got this girl, and she's large. And because she's large, nobody likes her. And everything goes wrong for her because she's large.
But Jesse?
Yeah. Now, she's wearing a fat suit. Okay. She's clumping it.
When I had my eyelids like peeled open and I was tied to the chair, or that's the way I remember it when the kids would make me watch it. I didn't remember her being a. Okay. That.
Okay. So she's wearing
probably,
that. That's only in like 5 minutes of the show. Okay.
Did we learn nothing from Shallow Hal?
No, we did not. Now, you also have Bob. And Bob is a lawyer, and he also coaches people to win pageants. Because for him, he has an insatiable desire to have his people win pageants. And she becomes insatiable because a homeless guy tried to take her candy bar. And so she punched him in the face, and then he punched her back. And so her jaw broke and had to be wired shut, and boom, she lost all this weight. And all of a sudden, everything's okay because she's not overweight.
That's basically like the modern day equivalent of the first 10 minutes of Network. are you sure Sorkin didn't have a hand in writing this show?
Now, Jenna is almost 12, and she is very apt. And she said, I need closure on this, but it's the worst. Here's my biggest problem with it. And I can say this because I, only being moderately fat now, I was like, crack the sidewalk fat. I don't feel that I was shamed by watching this. Though maybe if I was a young teen, it would subconsciously say, oh, they're right. If I have any extra weight, I am worthless. Okay, I can see that.
Around the time I think I turned 30, it was very difficult to damage me with, like, any kinds of – like, the older you get, when you are at an age that you are – I don't want to say easily manipulated, but I get – like, you don't have that life experience for – I can really only imagine, like, people will try to, like, catch me with things. Like, okay, I was a huge Star Trek fan. That's
popular,
not the most
popular with the girls.
That never. that was never a thing that made me popular. Like, I was funny, and hopefully some of them thought I was attractive. Like, that I had to play that funny card.
I just had, like, the funny card.
I was cheating at a game of Sabacc. Like, hitting it hard. Case in point.
Yeah, case in point. You have that going on. Now, I am surprised at this. You have people saying it's fat shaming, and yet you don't have people saying, why does she have the lesbian sidekick who is not attractive? It's like, my sidekick friend can't be attractive.
I believe it's called a duff.
And because she is gay, she's wearing the uniform, according to them, with the plaid shirt and this
so,
and that.
So basically it's taking
any stereotype.
Any kind of stereotype,
yes.
Like offensive ethnicity, okay. Like any of that.
Now let's take the well-groomed man. All of them turn out to be gay, which is, I have plenty of gay friends who are well-groomed, and I have just as many who are not. I get that's a stereotype, too. But when you have all these stereotypes...
Like, I don't want to say it's okay if you just do one.
No,
but, it's probably,
but you know what I mean?
It's probably more acceptable if you don't use them all.
Right. And my biggest problem with this, as I couldn't watch the rest of it because it was so ponderous. Because, see, okay, so she loses weight, and Bob's accused of being a pedophile, which he isn't. But it's just because the mom of one of his people lost a pageant, and so she thought she'd ruin his career. Okay. So, of course, he and she team up so she could win pageants. Boring. Anyway.
I mean, at least when Grease taught you the terrible, terrible lesson that it did, you got to listen to Olivia
right.
Newton-John and John Travolta. Like, please don't let your kids watch that movie. It has a terrible message.
Yes, it does.
And I've been telling people this for years.
And I agree with
but,
you.
But, like, darn it if John Travolta singing and dancing is not so much toe-tapping fun that I'm just like, well, we'll tell them about it after the movie's done.
Just change yourself completely for someone else, and you can ride a car in the sky.
If you are easy, boys will like you.
Exactly.
Change everything about yourself.
Start smoking.
As long as the boy likes it.
Yes. That is precisely the lesson.
That's what Insatiable's missing.
Okay.
Music from the creator of Grease.
So here, you have the girl sees the homeless guy, who is, since she punched him, even though he's suing her, he hasn't seen her since she lost weight, and he's gone to AA to clean up his life. So she decides, she's 18, by the way, she decides she's going to seduce him and then break up with him to ruin his life. But instead, he falls asleep, and she covers him with alcohol and is going to burn him alive.
Well, first I thought it was kind of like She's All That, and then...
No.
Then it took a really dark
yes.
kind of
then she
Anthony
decides,
Hopkins serial killer
yeah,
kind of
she
turn.
Decides not to burn him alive, but then it just goes on. You have a popular girl is pushed and becomes paralyzed from the waist down.
You sure Thomas Harris didn't help write this show? Like, is the insatiable actually an insatiable, like, need for, like, death? Like, is that
maybe.
What it just it kind of twists it there at the end. You're like, oh, it's an insatiable need for beauty pageants.
Now, I can see Adam and me watching this and having a good time in mocking it in real time. However,
I have long said, like, you and I doing commentaries on something, like doing a film commentary, like in real time, like Let Us Pick Them Out, would be a delightful idea for a podcast.
Then we're going to have to make that happen.
I'm just saying, like, Batman Returns, a movie that is just ripe, ripe. I appreciate the film, loved it when I was a kid. The more times I've seen it, the older I get, I realize just how weird that is, that it was targeted at kids, had a Happy Meal tie-in. Like, I've got, I don't know, 20 action figures from that. There's a scene where a man bites, like, another man's nose off, like he's eating raw fish. He dies and has, like, green mucus coming out of him, and then penguins bury him. That's a Batman movie, by the
right
way.
There.
Like, just...
creepy.
Didn't understand how weird it was. But you can't tell me, like, letting us pick that apart for 2 hours wouldn't be at least in some way entertaining.
We're going to make that happen. That's for another discussion.
Just
but
saying.
I think where Insatiable fails, other than the fact that the story totally blows, is that there's no one to root for. You don't really like any of them. You don't care what
happens
really
to
them. You really
want a protagonist. And
yeah.
I'm just saying, like, all the great ones do it. And by great ones, I mean
any author that has ever written a book or anything, you always have a like someone that you can get behind, mm-hmm. maybe somebody that you can identify with. Any of those, Andy Griffith on the Andy Griffith Show, he's the only one that isn't just some kind of a strange creature that mm-hmm. produces comedy. He is our guide, our host
yes.
into the town of Mayberry.
Maybe it's supposed to be Bob the lawyer, but I mean, I don't think he tries to burn anyone, like literally. It's just not good. Unless you're watching it to make fun of it, then you're going to have a heyday.
But I can't imagine that's what the producer, director, whomever like is the one who is the genesis point of the show. They're just like, you know what? We need to create. Like Plan 9 from Outer Space. I don't think that's what they were doing. I'm putting it out. I like I said, I don't know. I haven't researched this thing endlessly. It's not Jurassic Park. I don't yeah. have a lifelong fascination with it. I'm probably just going to leave it at this. I'm not even going to Wikipedia it.
Yeah, I
would. But I'm saying, because you're not the only one that's told me. This is kind of just like it's visual
I
garbage.
I mean, if you want to see Debbie Ryan in Daisy Dukes with a Tootsie Roll pop, this is your show.
That wouldn't even make a good poster.
So, that's. I'm gonna have to say it's cringe.
I think we're arrived at that well before you informed me that it was a cringe.
Yeah, I mean, in watching what I did watch, and by the way, by the time I finished watching the first one, Jenna said, I'm through 8 of them. It's like, okay, I guess you've seen what you've seen.
I'm going to leave it at that. I hope there wasn't any cursing or nudity.
I don't recall any nudity. There were probably implied situations, but it
seems
wasn't
to have
Skinamax.
Hit the bingo of things you shouldn't do on a show.
Yeah, it was just. Let's but see. What I liked is she had the same thing.
It's like 3 episodes in, and I got a bingo.
Yeah, she felt it was poorly written, and because we discussed it. And so now I feel like it's okay that she watched the whole thing.
You discussed why you should hate things. That's yeah. it. Specific reasons. Like, I don't just want you to have a general ambiance of, I dislike it. I want you to pick it apart piece by piece and understand the building blocks, your ingredients
yeah.
of why you hate this.
And that is exactly what we did. And then Hannah Grace said, now I have to watch it so I can hate it too.
Like she's a character in Seinfeld. She just happened to walk into the room. What's going on, Joe? Well, we're sitting here and we're dissecting this terrible Netflix show.
What's the deal with Netflix and the bad shows? Okay, so that's it. Binge or cringe. We say binge on the comedians because they are funny. Well, at least to us, and that's most of them. And cringe on Insatiable. I was sated 30 seconds in.
It was not aptly titled.
No, not one bit. So that's it. Anything you want us to watch, by all means, let us know, and we will get around to it because we do watch a lot of TV.
It's our thing.
Yes. So I am Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
And you've been listening to Binge or Cringe.